Good morning. This is Dr. Daniel J. Guerra, and this is Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is 17 May, 2024. We are finishing our T cell membrane biochemistry section one on immune biochemistry, the architectonic set of lectures, I think today. So this is going to be the final lecture, hopefully. If not this, then we'll do at least one more, and then that will definitely be it for this series of lectures. I could go on and on because there's new research being published on this general topic, as you might guess, literally every day. And in fact, I've been presenting a paper that was published in this month, in fact, came out, I think, only 2 days before I actually wrote that particular lecture, which is fine. But we need to move on because I want to start talking about B cells, and we're still in T cells. T cells are one of my favorite of all leukocytes. It is probably my favorite lymphocyte, although I guess B cells are interesting, particularly memory B cells. But interest alone does not provide the only set of rationale or reasoning for me to do lectures for you. I'm doing it for the audience. And also for my own increasing edification. So let's go ahead and start on this lecture. Endometrial cancer. It's one of the most common cancers of the female genital tract. And overall survival is about 70% in a 5-year range. Its incidence tends toward increasing. And the risk factors for endometrial cancer are obesity and aging. And obesity, as you know, enhances premature aging because obesity is a chronic disease state. Now, exogenous estrogen exposure also contributes to the incidence of endometrial cancer. And histological studies, particularly those composed of the endometrioid adenocarcinoma studies and the carcinosarcoma, clear cell carcinoma, and serous endocarcinoma studies in human disease have all been well addressed now for well over 40 years, but with the more modern techniques for specifically pharmacotherapeutic use of what is known as immunotherapy and its many forms, such as chimeric T cell receptor mediated alteration of T cell responses, one of which comes to mind. There has been a renaissance of studies in endometrial cancer, and that's why we have a pretty good success rate for survival. Now, type 1. Endometrial cancers can be subdivided into three grades, and they're associated with the differentiation status of the cells ranging from the most differentiated to the least differentiated. And that is associated respectively with good to very poor prognosis. So type 2 endometrial cancers are the ones usually typified by poorer survival than type 1. To get an idea of how these are graded. Now, endometrial cancers are also separated and classified according to the tumor localization. The extent of the tumor, that's called the T, the invasion of lymph nodes, that's N, and spreading to distant sites, of course, that's M for metastasis. And those three components, T, N and M help define pharmacotherapeutic treatment. Presence of CD8 positive T cells, the reason we're discussing endometrial cancer this morning, inside the endometrial tumor typically represents a marker for enhanced patient survival. Similarly, it's been demonstrated that intraepithelial CD103 positive, CD8 positive tumor-infiltrating T cells, remember those are the TILs, expressing the programmed DATH1 receptor, were antigen activated and were associated with improved survival. So even though programmed death receptor, if the tumor generates programmed death ligand, would turn down the tumor infiltrating T cell response, nevertheless, an expression of T cells with abundant PD-1, that's the receptor for programmed death. Remember how that works. If the ligand binds to the receptor, those cells that have faithfully bound that ligand will go through apoptosis. That's why it's called programmed death. But see, that's component of what I keep on emphasizing here. And of recent times now, only for the last couple of months, but I've emphasized it ever since I started Authentic Biochemistry, is that the sequence of events that relates to the immune response from the initial surveillance to the acquisition of information, let's say from antigen presentation, delivered to innate immune cells and thence to acquired immune cells like our T lymphocytes, will go through a processing wherein the T cell response will be initiated by the T cell receptor. Multiple intracellular alterations will occur in the T cell, including kinase cascades and phospholipid retailering mechanisms in the plasma membrane, which will then translocate and relocate polypeptides, ultimately leading to a transcriptional alteration. Typically, which then responds at least the first level with the production of pro-inflammatory cytokines, therefore to launch the initial battle, and if it's the case of being within a tumor microenvironment, to destroy the tumor. At the same time that is all being regimented, the T cell response is going to be auto-controlled by having a PD-1, a robust expression of PD-1 on the cell membrane. Now that is because if T cell response overshoots its mark and is then become unregulated, the T cells can destroy not just the tumor, but healthy tissues. And this is where it can cause a very severe negative outcome in the clinic, where you can have a hyperinflammatory response, and the hyperinflammatory response can then be lose complete control because of cell division of the T cells, and then the T cells interacting with B cells, including B memory cells, and then being further regulating the macrophage, dendritic cell, eosinophil, and mast cell basophil eosinophil association, to cause a much more robust pro-inflammatory, then becoming chronic hyperinflammatory and even auto-chronic inflammatory disease, which of course is going to enhance morbidity and will no longer be therapeutic in terms of the immune response. That's why there is the programmed death receptor at a healthy tumor microenvironment, meaning a tumor microenvironment, which is number one, going to start destroying the tumor. So it's healthy for the host, not the tumor, because of all the regulation associated with inflammation and cell proliferation and recruitment via chemokine pathways of multiple cell lineages, T helper cells, T effector cells, that is, of both the CD4 positive and CD8 positive. But also remember then the differentiation and enhanced replication of T regulatory cells to moderate the response. And so one of those early components is simply the programmed death receptor, which is PD-1, and then the programmed death ligand, which will control then at the level of apoptosis, the extremities of an overproduction of T cells. Okay. So what seems at the beginning paradoxical, you've got to understand is absolutely non-paradoxical. And what I've been saying for a very long time now in immune responses, when there is a pharmacotherapeutic agent that interacts at the specific delivery point that is here and now in the immune response to either enhance the immune response or to redirect it, that one interaction at the here and now, spatiotemporally, will result in alterations a priori, because some of those cells are not at the same stage of development as the ones that are being most robustly targeted because of the refinement of the pharmacotherapeutic. So it targets only the cancer cells, and particularly only the microenvironment inside the tumor, but cells that are not yet even showing an oncogenic event. And that alteration a priori, that is because those cells are going to be at an earlier stage of development, can then change epigenetically and sometimes even mutationally what will follow from that pharmacotherapeutic event, which at the beginning is therapeutic clinically, so that eventually the T cell response becomes corrupted from altering the a priori events. And I know that sounds paradoxical too, because a priori means before. But remember, not all cells are of the same stage of development. It's never the case. Right? Cells aren't synchronized in the body like you can synchronize them in cell culture. Okay? It's not how cells are. And the reason cells aren't all of the same biochemical, molecular, genetic, epigenetic poise, that adds that elasticity to living systems to deal with all temporal changes that are occurring all the time. Temporal changes occurring all the time. You see how that works out, right? It almost seems like a tautology, but it's not a tautology in the sense that you're talking about different cells, right? And those different cells are the ones that are at different stages of development. Same with a posteriori. Once a pharmaceutical agent is added and the target is faithfully ablated, altered in such a way to stop the clinical manifestation of the disease, say it's a specific endometrial cancer, everything subsequent to that in the normal repeal of the T cell mediated immune response, right? The repeal coming back to register will also be altered subsequently. And that alteration of regulation can also lead to a runaway hyperinflammatory or even runaway shutdown of the T cells, because of then finally the programmed death response becomes too vigorous, either because of PD ligand binding to PD-1 or in combination with Treg overproduction, can completely destroy the immune response. And then that whole system then will not be able to come back into full register until entirely new T cells are brought into the infection cord or the cancerous cord. You see? And this isn't just T cells. This would be all the innate immune cells and the B cells, and then all the bioenergetics and all the cell fate considerations in each of those cell lineages, differentiation, transcription factors, the expression of different sphingolipids and phosphoglycerol lipids, and the utilization of omega-3 versus omega-6 fatty acids for the various components of the immune response to be carried out in what is a normal regimented sequence of events when there is no agentic introduction of a pharmacotherapeutic. See how that has to be taken into consideration, and it's very difficult to do because it is a constantly changing environment, and most drugs aren't tested like that. They're tested for pharmacodynamics, pharmacokinetics, right? What pharmacodynamics is, what is it doing to the target? How does it stop the event? How does it shut off, say, the expression of an oncogene, a mutated oncogene? or the pharmacokinetics. What is the body doing to the drug to turn it over too rapidly, or to maintain it or to sequester it so it's no longer available, or to maintain it so that it's overly potent, right? Those are the only real considerations that are brought in line. What has to be brought in line is the living system. The living system is very complex, as I hope you see. Okay, so the presence of CD8-positive T cells inside the endometrial tumor represents a marker of patient survival. That's clear. And as I said, CD103-positive, CD8-positive TILs expressing PD-1 were antigen-activated and were fully associated with improved survival from the cancer. Now, defective DNA polymerase epsilon, now that's got a name, an acronym, that's called the POLE or POL, right? Polymerase epsilon. It has proofreading capability, and it leads to extensive somatic mutation that will exhibit, as you might guess, certain downstream, a posteriori, biased mutational events. Okay. Now, DNA polymerase epsilon, POLE, or POLE epsilon, is required for genome duplication. That's what its normal job is. It's also involved, because it's proofreading, for tumor suppression. So it supports both the replisome assembly and leading strand synthesis for nation DNA. So a conserved domain within the POLE epsilon catalytic core will influence both of those replication steps. And modeling the cancer-associated mutations in that domain associated with the POLE activity reveals its, let's call it, pseudo-paradoxical effect on incorporating POLE epsilon into the four-member preloading complex during replisomal assembly. Now, in addition to that, you have genetic and biochemical data which suggest that the domain, the POLE domain, supports the catalytic event, and then ultimately, not only that, but the symmetric spatial temporal movement of replication forks in DNA synthesis. So, contrary to previously characterized POLE epsilon cancer variants, many mutants cause genome hyper-rearrangement. Hyper-rearrangement is not hypermutation. Okay, so that suggests a role for POLE epsilon catalytic core in replisomal formation, and then the reliance of that POLE epsilon strand synthesis on generating unique and perhaps non-mutable domains. That then generates a potential tumor suppressor effect of POLE epsilon, curbing ultimately the overall regulation of genome rearrangement that could ultimately result in mutation or paramutation. And we're not even talking about epimutation yet, which and ultimately epigenetic events. All of those can be downstream from here. Now, paper we're going to be looking at describes a molecular profile using whole exome sequencing, so leaving the introns out, based on the transition of somatic mutations of 10 polymerase epsilon mutated solid tumors that were obtained from some 2,000 patients. This is a Japanese study. So, you understand what's going on. Now, here we're saying that the POLE epsilon has in itself, in its gene, a mutation. So that obviously would be considered very likely an oncogenic a priori event. Right? So POL and then P10 mutations, I'll tell you what that is in a minute if you don't remember, are responsible for the development of what are just generically known as POL mutated tumor development. So homologous recombination is restored following the occurrence of a P10 mutation. Now, P10 as a protein, as an enzyme, dimerizes and binds to the cell membrane upon dimerization. Okay. And so the P10 then, once it's dimerized in the membrane and it's sequestered there, modifies proteins and lipids within that membranous system by removing phosphate. So it's a phosphatase. So P10 then is phosphatase and tensin homolog. So that's called P10. And it works as a catalytic enzymatic phosphatase. It's encoded by the PTEN gene. Right? And mutations in that gene, which have been marked, are a step up that ladder into the development of many cancers. Which ones? Some very, very, very lethal cancers. Glioblastoma, various types of lung cancer, various types of breast cancer, various types of prostate cancer. So this basically derivatizes mutation driven tumorigenesis, mutations in P10. Okay. Don't worry, this is coming from multiple papers. I'll put them all in the show notes for you. So that's what I've been doing. That's why I had a day off, why I didn't lecture yesterday, because I've been doing a bunch of research for these lectures. Which is what I do every day anyway. So the POL, which remember the polymerase epsilon, mutated profile correlates sometimes with best survival because it's associated with a high CD8 positive T cell infiltration proliferation, including PD1, programmed death receptor expression, on those tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes, those TILs. Not only on the CD8, but also on CD4 positive T cells. That in itself illustrates the importance of TILs, those are tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes, in the pathophysiology in general of endometrial cancer. Now, when we talk about natural killer cells, you know, those are cytotoxic, innate lymphoid cells, and they are actually the major anti-tumor effector cell type, along with CD8 positive T cells and the gamma delta Ts in endometrial cancer. Okay, so you have the full suite of T cells being involved. Now, you know that natural killer cell activation and its generating cytotoxicity, which we've talked about many times, rely on a balance between those inhibitory and activating receptor mediated signaling responses, right? It's a balance there. Now, in the class 1 human leukocyte antigens, IG-like transcripts, these are known as TIGITs, T-I-G-I-Ts. This is the T cell immunoreceptor with IG, that's immunoglobulin, and ITIM domain. And that's going to present with inhibitory cytokines and pro-inflammatory cytokines, including TGF-beta, interleukin-6, and interleukin-32. And those are going to be providing now growth regulatory and inhibitory signals for natural killer cell function and event activation. Now, on the contrary, various activating receptor engagements, such as the DNAM1, the KIRs, the natural killer P80, the natural killer G2D, and then the natural killer receptors along with activating cytokines like IL-15, IL-18, IL-12, lead to the physiological activation of NK cell effector and proliferation domains. So you have inhibitors and you have proliferating and activating components, all of which are the ones I described to you just now are all basically cytokines. So the activating receptors are triggered by stress-induced self molecules, what we're saying. But what also can contribute to that are mutated polypeptides from the tumor microenvironment and even some virally induced oncogenic factors. Now, in cancers in general, NK cells are very efficient because they're, especially during their elimination phase, because they will immediately arrest tumor growth. Do you understand? However, natural killer cell function is often altered while in residence, that is spatially, temporally, in the tumor. And that occurs after tumor immune evasion, which occurs and then allows tumor growth and further tissue invasion. So what did I just say? Once you get a robust T cell delivery into the tumor microenvironment, those T cells now have the potential for becoming altered at the molecular, genetic, and epigenetic level via mutation or paramutation to start becoming agents which promote the cancer. All right? So the cancer redirects T cell mediated responses. Now, this isn't a foolproof thing for the cancer, but it's something that occurs the longer the residence time of a given population of, for example, natural killer cells in the tumor microenvironment. Okay? So this is a natural event. Now, endometrial tumors and tumor-adjacent healthy tissue, along with blood from matching patients and healthy donor blood, were used to do a comparative analysis of natural killer cells in these 2,000 endometrial female Japanese patients in this study. And there is very few natural killer cell population in the tumor infiltrate. And even the amount of CD56 bright NK cells are differentially increased in the tumor. Remember the N56 bright. Now remember how that is modulated by CD57 and CD103? The CD57 and CD103 mediate whether or not the CD56, if they're at the bright level of expression, will be either of low activity, below the level of actually controlling the cancer, high level activity, but unregulated, or that intermediate stasis response, depending on the expression of those other cell surface proteins, remember, in terms of regulation of natural killer cell activation, and then ultimately its ability to carry out cytotoxicity. Now, they found that tumor-resident natural killer cells expressing CD103 exhibited more co-inhibitory molecules like the T cell immunoreceptor with IG and ITIM domain. Those are the TIGITs. And the T cell immunoglobulin and mucin domain containing 3. Those are known as TIM3s. That's in comparison to non-resident natural killer cells. So tumor resident, you have that particular phenotype and genotype and cell type as opposed to the non-resident. Okay. So they're not interleukin 15, which of course is a classical pro-cytotoxic cytokine, was reduced in the endometrial tissue.